So you seem a little low energy today.
Yeah, I think running a conference and being in Las Vegas at the same time does that to you.
You've been back for a couple of days, but you're still kind of catching up.
Yeah, that's how it is every year. MicroConf really requires about a two-day recovery period. I think I slept till 11 a.m. 2 days in a row. And I'm not tired physically anymore, but I am not operating at full capacity. Even though I'm drinking coffee, I just feel very subdued.
So we're going to spend this episode reflecting on the recent MicroConf 2015, that was in Las Vegas last weekend, and just kind of talking through some of the highs and lows that we both experienced at the conference, and then maybe reflecting more broadly on why Rob and Mike have decided to do this conference. Sound like a game plan?
Yeah, it does. Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about.
So given that you're a little low energy, maybe I'll just ask you some questions.
Cool, let's do it.
Why did you start MicroConf?
It was originally started as a way to get bunch of friends together, friends who had never met, right? It was really mostly aimed at the Micropreneur Academy, which is Mike and mine's online membership website. And it's this online community of bootstrapped or self-funded startup founders. And we thought that we would have it fairly small and get maybe 100 of those folks together, because we'd been on the forums and talking and been on podcasts together and stuff, but we'd never met in person. As it turned out, that first year, I think we only got about 35 folks from the academy to come, and it was about 110 total. So there was about another 75 from just the broader startup community that showed up. And it was really about meeting each other and I think trying to extend the relationships, because there was no self-funded startup community before that, really before our podcast and Micropreneur Academy. And so I think we were kind of dipping our toe in the water, and as we are apt to do, just experiment with something to see if it'll fly.
So I remember after the first year at the Riviera, which was now 5 years ago, you coming home and saying, I'm never doing that again.
Yep.
So you've just done number seven. What happened?
Yeah, seriously. The toll that it takes is non-trivial. Like, it wrecks the full week of the event. I'm out of it. I'm either there planning or recovering like I've been for the past couple of days. And I don't seem to be getting any better at avoiding that. We have since hired out a lot of the coordination and the day-to-day logistics preparing for it. I mean, the first year, Mike and I spent hundreds of hours. Instead of working on our startups, we spent hundreds of hours, you know, dealing with hotels and caterers and room counts and just stuff that we really shouldn't be dealing with. Since then, we've hired our coordinator, Xander, and he has taken the brunt of that off our plates, right? So those hundreds of hours now translate into maybe 15, 20 hours over the course of the months preparing for it.
Therefore, establishing Xander as my best friend.
Exactly, right? It takes stuff off my plate, allows me to keep growing the business, makes MicroConf more sustainable, period, because we don't have to spend all the time in advance prepping and basically taking our eye off the ball, taking our eye off our products.
So even with Xander, though, it's a lot of work. It sort of takes you out of commission for a week. Obviously, there's a lot of planning and decision making that goes into it. Why do you still do it? Why have you now done it seven times? What's in it for you, so to speak?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, we receive an enormous amount of positive feedback about it. And that is really encouraging. And it's helpful for us to know that it's having an impact. And the fact that it is changing people's businesses, changing people's lives, and extending these relationships has to be the number one reason that I do it. I think for Mike as well. I don't want to necessarily speak for him. But the amount of this was a game changer for me and feedback like I'm a lifer, I've been to five or six of them. I mean, there's people that just keep coming back. So the fact that we've built something that people want and that it actually serves a purpose in the community is really powerful. And then, I mean, the other reasons are I do enjoy it when I'm there. I really like seeing everybody. And I'm concerned that if we, let's just say we suddenly shut it down, which we don't have plans of doing, but if we did, I would still want to go to a conference and see everybody. We built the conference we wanted to attend. And I don't really want that to go away. I can't imagine who else would pick up that slack.
How has it changed over time? How is this year different than the Riviera in year one?
Yeah. And I think certainly we have more leeway to do creative things because we now have a base of what works. And we know there's a particular format of showing up and having some solid speakers. And then we can deviate from that and run experiments, knowing that even if those experiments fail, we haven't wrecked the conference. That first year, it was completely touch and go. Parts of it were a train wreck. Our scheduling wasn't very good. We didn't have any budget, so the hotel was not very good. We had a tough time selling tickets. We had a tough time getting speakers, you know, on and on and on. So this year, I mean, it's such a name now, MicroConf. Everybody in our space kind of knows it. So it's really easy to recruit speakers. And since we sell out so quickly, we do have budget to do some cool things, to up the game in terms of the quality of the hotel, to have nice outdoor events with just perks that you really couldn't do the first year. And then in terms of the attendees, I mean, it's shockingly different because the relationships are there now. That first year, no one knew anyone. And it was this kind of awkward group of 100 people trying to figure out who's who. And we didn't know what anybody looked like. And wow, you look taller than I thought. And then by this time, we get about between a 60 and 70% return rate. So by this time, there really are groups of people that are good friends that see each other once a year at MicroConf. So there's a lot more cohesion among the attendees.
There's this whole like WordPress mafia that gets together and they're all like, we're WordPress people.
It was cool. It was like Chris Lemma and Jason Cohen and Phil Dirksen and Dave Rodenbaugh. I was like, hi, WordPress guys. They all laughed, but they totally were hanging out. I think there's also a danger in that, to be honest. I mean, we had someone bring up, you know, what about first-time attendees? If there are only 50 or 60 first-time attendees this year, how do we help them fit in and not feel like they're cliques or like it's hard to break in? And I didn't hear from anyone specifically that said they felt that way, but I definitely am aware of it. And some people brought it up as a possibility. Like if we keep building this tight community, it becomes harder and harder to break in. And so Mike and I have already started talking about ways to combat that and to help the first timers integrate into the group.
What were your personal favorite moments from this year? Besides, of course, the spontaneous fountain in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
Which was my favorite moment.
That was pretty crazy. It was very surreal. The sprinkler head went off because one of the AV guys hung a light under a sprinkler head. It set it off. And so the sprinkler goes off in the middle of the conference. So it was right towards launch during Patrick McKenzie's website teardowns. And the water's black because it's been in the pipe for 50 years. And everyone just starts scattering and two or three people got sprayed with water. But it just felt like, what is going on? And at first I was surprised and then started thinking like, is this it? Is the conference done? Like what happens next? This whole room that they took half a day to set up is basically unusable now. And luckily, with Xander's help, the hotel got in gear and we were back. We basically just went to lunch and only wound up being about a half hour late coming back from lunch because they had a whole separate room set up for a different group the next day. And we just kind of winged it. And the audio wasn't great and the screens were a little small and stuff, but we got it together.
The show rolled on.
Yeah. I think that might be one of my favorite moments, not the sprinkler itself, but the recovery. Like we're starting to get fairly good at this if we could recover that quickly. It was in an initial shock and everyone was talking about it. But even by like early that afternoon, no one was talking about it anymore because the conference just kept going on. And I'm not sure the first year if we would have been able to to mentally deal with that.
There's enough professionals in the process now that it just was pretty seamless. It just rolled on.
Right. And we've dealt with enough of these small issues that you just kind of learn how to roll with them.
Any other highs for you this year? Any other moments where you're like, this is awesome. I'm so glad I'm here.
One of my other favorite parts of MicroConf is seeing people who were just unknown to the community and weren't even aware we existed a couple years ago, now up on stage, partially through MicroConf and obviously a lot through their own hard work, they've gone from zero to basically building businesses that are worth talking about. And there were a number of attendee talks of people who I'm just like, man, I remember when you were just getting started and now how far you've come that you're able to teach this to the group. And even someone like Samuel Hulick, who was basically my intern a couple years ago and then did an attendee talk last year and is now, he did a full 40-minute talk this year on user onboarding. That makes me happy that there's a path for people to come up and do this and to, in essence, be able to give back to the community in the same way that maybe there were only 10 years ago, there were a few startup internet celebrities. And now, like so many of us can break through that barrier, not to become celebrities, but to be teachers and to be able to share the knowledge that we've gained.
It's neat to watch people grow over time.
Exactly.
Any low points this year?
I mean, I think that when the sprinkler first hit, that was definitely disorienting, not good. I think the concern, it was interesting that it hit me all at once that we've done it 7 times, including the 2 in Europe. And it feels like, man, we really have this dialed in. But every year, something new kind of crops up that we have to combat, one of which is figuring out next year how to get first-timers more engaged. And then there was also a kind of a Twitter discussion about how to get more women to the conference. And I think both of these things are very valuable to discuss. And I think they're things we need to look at. But it was kind of a sigh. I was kind of thinking, man, we really have this dialed in. We've done this. It's just set it and forget it now. But it'll never be that way. There's always going to be so many complexities that we need to continue thinking about to push the conference forward. Otherwise, I think it will stagnate.
And I think something like the conversation about having more women in the room is a tricky one because, I mean, I know personally that's something that's very important to you and that you've taken mm-hmm. some specific steps to make sure that women are on stage and women's voices are heard. But it's a larger cultural problem that happens to get represented at MicroConf. And right. I think when people kind of give that feedback, we need more women here, that there's a temptation for that to feel like that's on you. When I think it's on everybody to figure out how to include women more in the technology world. And you just happen to be the conference organizer, not that you have no responsibility, but you also don't have all the responsibility.
Right. Any conference sees this. Like you said, our entire industry sees it. And so it's something we want to put thought into and make some efforts. We have made efforts in the past, and fortunately, they haven't really yielded much. But I do think it's probably time to kind of reactivate that again and get some thinking on it and attack it in 2016 and see what we can do.
And that's one of the reasons that I think it's important for me to come, even though I'm not a founder and I don't correct this problem, but to be a female presence in the room and to help foster some conversations about it is part of my intention for being there.
I agree. I think it's super helpful, not just because you're another female, but because there's this thread in MicroConf. It's the family thread, right? It's the relationships thread, that life is part of our startup and our startup is part of our life, that these things are not mutually exclusive, like maybe in the venture funded world where people just kind of eschew their life while they do this, potentially wreck relationships. I mean, I think that's the stereotype anyways, not saying everybody does that, but you being there is kind of like, I have a family too, and my wife is here. We haven't brought our children to Vegas for obvious reasons, but we have brought them to the conference in Europe, and that was kind of cool when they ran up and everybody got to see, here's Rob running the conference, but the family's here as well. And I think it's important for people to see that. I mean, even down to the most speakers put a slide with one of their kids or all of their kids on stage during their talk. And that's kind of become this joking tradition. But there's meaning to that. There's a reason that that started. And it's because we aren't afraid to show that we have personal lives.
And that's another of the reasons that I think it's important for me to come, not to make a statement to anybody else, but to really show my support for you and honor the fact that you're doing something that I think is really important and I'm really proud of you about. And so for me to be there in the audience when you're giving a talk feels like a really important way to show up and say, hey, this is awesome that you're doing this. I also, you know, I like being next to you at the speaker dinner and I like being able to support you there.
It's interesting to think that the first couple MicroConfs, you didn't come at all. And now, in retrospect, that feels weird. But I remember when you first suggested that you wanted to come, I said, I don't think that I can possibly run this conference and like kind of interact like a human because it's so consuming.
You can't really.
Yeah, no, I know. Even though you do come, I still don't. No, I was concerned the first year you suggested coming and I was kind of like, oh, you're not going to fit in. It's going to be weird, all this stuff. I just had hesitation about it. And now I would really prefer not to do one without your presence at the conference.
I think you did a good job of saying, hey, I am in work mode when I'm here and I'll eat some meals with you, but
I might not say a single word while we're eating meals.
I might not be a good conversationalist. And again, I think us being able to clarify our expectations, I'm not coming to hang out with you and have a vacation with you. I'm coming because I know you're working. And if I can be helpful to you by running and getting you some, like a breakfast sandwich here and there, then I'm happy to do that. But I also know that it's important that most meals and most conversations you're having with your colleagues, because that's why you're there. And I'm not there to hang out with you in that way.
But I think one of the cool things that has evolved out of that, because maybe the first year you were just there as my wife, right? And you just showed up and talked to people, and maybe you were a novelty because of that. But then the next year you did an attendee talk and everyone loved it, right? You get a lot of positive reviews. And then the next year you did a full main stage talk. And then people start requesting, well, I'd like to see Sherry talk again. Then we started this podcast. And so this year you were as swamped as any of the speakers, because people wanted to talk to you about the podcast or about your thoughts on different founder issues. It's like you've begun to kind of make a name for yourself as someone knowledgeable in this space. And I felt like you were able to stand on your own, that even if I had not attended this year, that you could have gone and basically done just fine interacting with the attendees, because you kind of stand on your own two legs in terms of your knowledge and your name recognition now.
I also have my own friends now, which is fun. I always love seeing Dave Collins and Breck. I mean, I have my own like group of people that I look forward to catching up with. It's always good to see Ruben. And one of my favorite things this year is that for this podcast, I made some plans ahead of time to do some in-person interviews with some founders that are sometimes a little bit harder to schedule with. And I got to sit down with Heaton Shaw and Erica Douglas and Stelly and Patrick McKenzie. And with each of them, I asked them about their early lives. So kind of talked with them about childhood and how they became founders, essentially. So those interviews will be coming out here as part of the podcast in the next couple of weeks and months. But those were really, really fun conversations. And I really appreciated the time to like sit down with each of them for 45 minutes and have a more in-depth, detailed conversation.
Yeah, I think that's going to make for some good radio. I'm excited about that. So 4 years ago, the first MicroConf that you came to, why did you want to come? Why did you start coming to MicroConf?
To be honest, I was a little befuddled about what the whole thing was. Hmm. 5 years ago, you kind of said, I'd like to get some people together in Las Vegas and put on a conference. And I was like, okay. I mean, it felt like a little bit of a left turn from the other work that you had been doing in the startup world. So you did it, you went, you came home, you were super tired. You said, I'm never doing that again. But voila, a year later, you're doing it again. And I kind of felt like I would like to go and see what this is. I'd like to sort of check it out. So primarily, I guess it was curiosity.
Were you suspicious that I was making it all up and that that really nobody knew who I was?
I wouldn't say that, but I was like, I had no context for you as a conference organizer or upfront speaker, or I mean, I hadn't really seen you speak very much. So I just was confused and I wanted to see for myself what the deal was.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what were your impressions that first year?
I remember being pretty darn impressed by how legitimate it all was. I mean, I go to academic conferences and so I have definitely a sense of what a conference is. And it was like a legitimate conference. Like it was not just you and a bunch of guys in a man cave somewhere in Las Vegas talking about your startups. Like it was totally put together, totally professional. And I was super impressed.
And you wanted to be a part of it. I mean, the next year you were all over submitting an attendee talk to kind of participate. I think that's something that MicroConf has, this thing where it like makes people want to get involved. They see other people creating, and whether it's creating a startup or creating a talk and just contributing, and it makes others want to do that as well. Routinely, we get 40 plus attendee talk submissions. Well, I think we got 50 last year out of 220 attendees. So that's almost 25% of attendees wanted to do a talk on stage, which is kind of shocking, a shocking ratio.
And I think some of the magic of MicroConf, at least from my perspective, is that the speakers and the big success story internet celebrity folk are really accessible. And so they just don't feel that different from the normal people. And yeah, I think that makes it feel like, oh, I see them doing this cool thing on stage. I see them talking about their work. I could do that too.
Yeah, I think that was by accident to be honest. The first year, we were just so inexperienced. It seems like conferences, like, they do handle their speakers with kid gloves and maybe have separate receptions for them. I don't know what other conferences do, but whatever it is, we just didn't do that because we just got everybody together in a room and then invited everybody to the same bar to hang out with for the receptions. And all the speakers showed up and people were so surprised by that. And they couldn't believe that they were talking to Patrick McKenzie and Ramit Sethi and whoever else that first year. But we got such positive feedback about it that we said, this is our thing. We need to mix everyone. And we can't have there be these different stratas of popularity or of name recognition, that everyone needs to be as accessible as possible to everyone who attends.
And the big supporters of MicroConf, the speakers who have come back every year, haven't Heaton and Patrick been to all of them?
Yeah.
All of them in Vegas?
All of them in Vegas, yep. And Patrick's been to one in Europe too. So he's been to six.
And both of them in particular as people are, I think, intentionally very approachable. They're not beyond talking to anybody about their idea or their life or their perspective.
Yeah.
And Jason's like that too, very accessible.
Right, Jason Cohen. We've had a couple speakers that have been more aloof and they don't necessarily fit the vibe. They may give a great talk, but they kind of aren't like recurring MicroConf speakers because they just...
They probably don't want to come back.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on getting more women to MicroConf? Like, I guess to start with, when you entered a room for the reception, there's 150 people and maybe only 10 of them are women. How does that feel to you walking into that scenario?
It's pretty hard, actually, especially in the first years when I would come. At this point, I know there are enough familiar faces that I feel comfortable. I have somebody to sort of go to and engage with. But it's a daunting thing, I think, for anybody to walk into a room full of folks that they don't know. But I think when you're the only one of whatever that is, the only woman in this case, that feels really kind of overwhelming. And one of the things that really struck me in the interview that I did with Erica Douglas, and I'll share this on the podcast in the future in more detail, but actually like teared up a little bit when we were talking about this. I mean, I think men don't always realize how much sexism and sort of assumption, negative assumptions are present in culture. And so to walk into a room, I think it takes like a big culture change among men in the world, not just men in the startup space, to make those environments feel safe and feel like comfortable to women. When Erica was talking about it, in many, many little ways, there are assumptions that she's less competent or capable because she's a woman. And that's right. Not any one big jerk. That's lots of little assumptions.
Right. And that's not at MicroConf specifically, right? She was just
not at all.
In technology.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a hard problem. It's a lot bigger than MicroConf.
Sure. And it's something that I think we can work on to address. I mean, I really do want to get more women to the conference.
And I think maybe offering some special programs for women, like a meetup that's for women, where you have people like Erica Douglas.
You.
Yeah. Who else? I mean, that's the problem, is there aren't as many leaders and mentors, but that you have like a meetup for MicroConf women where it is a smaller group and there's some mentoring available and there's some camaraderie in being one of the women. And that helps with the sea of male faces. When you have some context and you know a few people more specifically, you feel like you have a little team that you can rely on.
You have anything else on that topic?
I mean, I think some strategies would be to specifically invite groups of women in startups and like reach out to them more, create some special programming, a special meetup, to kind of recognize that there are some barriers to participating in MicroConf, to participating in tech more broadly, and do what you can to alleviate those barriers, helping people feel less isolated, more supported, and more mentored.
Yeah, and I think it's something that if we do it next year, it might just make a tiny little blip. And maybe, you know, what if it adds 5 women to the attendee count? But hopefully it's something that could build momentum over time. Right. And it may not fix it the first year, but that it could add, even if we added 5 each year, I mean, that would have some impact over time.
It takes a long time to change these cultural differences. And again, it's much bigger than MicroConf.
I think there's a broader point here that we haven't talked about yet. And it's the idea of how important it is to celebrate and participate in what's going on in our lives as a married couple. I think that early on, like I said, I didn't see a space for you at MicroConf because I was just so intent on working, right? And it just takes so much out of me. But it's been such a plus for you to be there to support me, frankly. And it's been super cool for me to see you get involved as well. And I think that the more that couples can share in this kind of stuff, I think there's a real benefit to not necessarily commingling certain parts of it. I mean, we've talked about how we keep finances separate and that kind of stuff, but just celebrating the victories and being able to really support each other in these is absolutely critical to keeping a healthy relationship.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot for me to be there and sit and hear your talk. And like, I have this like goofy smile on my face the whole time. Like, I have to sit in the back so nobody can see my face and make fun of me. But I'm like taking pictures of you. Like, I'm like a doting soccer mom or something. But those are the moments that make the partnership really fun. And it's not one-sided. I mean, you came to my dissertation defense. You proofread my entire stinking dissertation. You have shown up for all of the big moments in my life. And I think that's just part of having a strong partnership is you show up and you are the super fan. And that's why I come to MicroConf. I'm your number one fan. And that's what I signed up for when I decided to marry you. And that's what I think has made all the difference in our marriage when we've decided that the first priority is to support each other. I will keep showing up to MicroConf with my goofy smile and kind of play hostess alongside you and Mike, and look forward to be part of that community in my own way.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.